I hope you guys don't mind. I brought my big book here tonight. Is that okay? May I make a declaration? The big book is making a comeback in Alcoholics Anonymous. Let me hear you. Come on. Yeah, good deal. My name is Bill Brown. I'm a very grateful recovered alcoholic. My sobriety date is June 13th of 2013. So let the numbers sink in. I have a group of yellow tag guys who'll be handing out 4-step packs for the evening to most of you old timers. I thought it would be nice for you to have something to write on as you take my inventory for the next hour or so. Oh man, what a cool weekend though. What an honor to have been asked to even be part of this thing. I've heard about it through friends in the program, but to experience it is a whole different deal, and I know you know what I'm talking about if you have been here, and I'm just getting some traction on that experience, and it's a pleasure. It really is. Now, man, I feel like the meetings between the meetings is where it's at. I was having coffee this morning and with some of these guys, Ricky and Charlie, in my cabin, and hearing them go back and forth about old Atlanta and what it was like, and it was just so cool to hear some of these guys holding court. It's a really, really neat experience, and it can happen only at a place like this with people like us. And again, what a pleasure to be here. So thank you guys for that. And we've had some awesome speakers and panels, and Paul. I found your hair, so I know you're there. And yeah, you know, he's like a Las Vegas show with depth and weight. Really, really cool. You know, I was waiting for him to break into song with an angelic voice, but he broke into dance instead. And I'm thinking, man, if this speaking training thing doesn't work out, man band all the way, bro. Man band. And Ricky and Jose and Herb this morning, man, I'm going to call these guys, that's like the AAOG panel. And if you caught that, you know what I'm talking about. Thank you guys for your experience as well. What a really, really cool deal. Now, tonight, listen, if this goes horribly wrong, it's not Bill's fault. I can promise you that. This is the way I think it played out. I'm convinced he actually thought he was calling Joe Walsh, who we saw on video last night. I know we're trying to get maybe some traction on getting him here. I think he pocket dialed me by accident. He goes through the spiel and he hears me say, yes. And by the time the flyers are printed, it was just a little too late. He realizes his mistake and here I stand. Again, it's not his fault. But I got to tell you, he really rolled the dice with this deal tonight. But we'll find out. You know, when I was thinking about it, I was kind of laughing at myself. So whenever I'm around a group of sober men that I don't know, kind of like this deal, I'm always scared like it's just a big intervention. Because I've been in interventions and it kind of looks like this. People that are sober who I don't know, and I'm thinking, you're coming to take me again. I can just feel it. And that's kind of what it feels like. And I'm just glad it's not that, so I can relax a little bit once I kind of come to grips with it. And I was thinking, man, I've got a sponsee getting on an airplane tomorrow out of Atlanta, getting ready to go up to Connecticut to face some of the wreckage that we bring into rooms and retreats like this. And he's got to stand up to probably some judges and some people. And I don't know what's going to happen. I know God's got it. I know he's on the path that we are on, you know. But I'm going back and we're doing a little one-upping each other the other day. We're kind of hanging out. I'm like, yeah, that sounds like you maybe have some issues. But here's the deal. Man, I got to go to this place with these people. I got to tell my story, and that's going to be fine. No big deal. But when I go to bed, they're all going to get together late at night and talk about how stupid I sounded. That's what I'm up against, you know. And I go, those are the things I think about, you know, and that's where my mind can go. And I was told by a very good friend of mine and a mentor, wherever I'm experiencing fear, I'm experiencing agnosticism. Let that sit for a minute, you know, and I kind of get that. So my home group is up in Sandy Springs. It's a group called Big Book Comes Alive. I get to sit with my grand sponsor up there. Some of you guys know Larry. He's been around here and he's been around Atlanta for a long time. And we get to bring this book to life for whoever will have it, and then hopefully, like someone said, do it. And we're having a lot of fun on Wednesday nights at 8 p.m. doing that deal. So because I have a grand sponsor, it kind of goes without saying I have a sponsor, kind of bringing in some of those details. But we kind of have that weird incestual family dynamic thing going on, and I don't know if that's like in your sponsorship family. So my grand sponsor sponsors my sponsor, but he also sponsors my wife. So every now and then I just feel compelled that I have to 10-step with my sponsor and just get honest with him and tell him I'm sleeping with one of his sponsor's sponsees. Usually meth addicts pick that up real quick. I'm impressed with you guys. Nice, nice. And that's just kind of what it's like, but it's kind of cool. It's a pretty cool deal. Man, I don't know, just kind of getting off the jump here. So the book tells me to share in my own words, in my own language, from my own point of view, how I established a relationship with God. And that's what I hope to do over the next few minutes. But I was thinking about this deal, and so I get access to this power that does the one thing I've never been able to do. And that's stop, stay stopped, and be free. Right? I could never pull that off. So I get access to this power, and the miracle happens, talks about in the 10th step. You know? But it's the little things, too, that just kind of blow me away. I'm going to share this with you. I'm going to bring you in on my life a little bit. I have this little bookmark right here that I keep in my big book. This was given to me by my sister. My sister is a hero. Everyone turned my back because everyone should have. I gave them a reason, but she stayed. She's my older sister by quite a lot. We weren't super close growing up or anything like that, but she stayed. I've asked her since then. I just said, Kelly, why did you stay? She just said, that's what sisters do. And I thought, do they? So if there's anyone in here that has a sister in your story, man, I dig and I feel you. My sister gave this to me as a gift over this past Christmas season. I'm from the Portland, Maine area, which is where I did most of my growing up and a lot of my running and a lot of my drinking. And I was up there visiting family. We kind of had Christmas before Christmas because it fit with my schedule. And she gave me this bookmark, and it's personalized on the front. And it's kind of a cool deal. But this is what blows me away. I've had this since like 2 weeks into December. I haven't even pawned it yet. You know, like, right? Like, surely I can get a couple of bucks for this kind of, like, that is the kind of thing that wasn't even an option or a possibility, because if you were giving it to me, I was giving it to the pawn shop. Those are the kind of things that I have experienced in a lot of my running, especially at the end. You know, and I was thinking about this deal. We look around here. You know, this is, it's just one of those things. It's like, look around the room, look where you're, and I know some of you guys, you're comfortable, but look where you are, look who you're with, right? If you had told me 6 years ago, Bill, here's a vision for you, right? Coming in here, I was super skeptical, right? You are going to work all of the steps willingly. Oh, really? Okay, you know. You're going to go to meetings willingly. You're going to have a home group, and you're going to choose to drive 2.5 hours each way to that group because that's where you're supposed to be. Willingly. You're going to own a big book, read the big book, and study the big book, and pass it on willingly. You are going to spend a fun, sober weekend in the woods with a whole bunch of men you don't know. Willingly. I'd have had some words for you. And they weren't very nice. This isn't how I drew it up. I can't draw this up. I don't have the ability to draw this up. And what if I had? What if I had drawn this up? Because here's the deal. I'd have sold myself way, way short. And I was talking to someone about that today. This is not how it was supposed to look like. And thank God I'm not the architect of it. If you had promised me one thing and said, Bill, all I can guarantee for you is you will not drink and you will not use again, but that's all I can offer. That's the only promise I can give you. Would you have taken it on your way in? Heck yeah! Like, isn't that, like, that's the thing, right? That's the deal. That's the problem, right? I'd have missed everything. And my guess is my life would have been miserable enough in very short order that I have a vast history that I've got to change how I feel no matter what. I'd have missed the first promise of hope in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, and it tells me on the title page that there are many thousands of men and women in the fourth edition that have recovered from alcoholism. It didn't say anything about not drinking anymore. Now, I get the recovered part and the not drinking go together. Like, I get that, right? And but that's the thing, right? Big book tells me a little bit later on, you know, we feel that elimination of our drinking is only a beginning. Wow. But that's all I would have taken that gladly as the deal. Thank God there's so much more. And you can feel it at a place like this. There's obviously more. Would we be doing this for any other reason? Right? Willingly and joyfully, you know. Bill's story, 7 pages in, he makes a reference to something, and I feel compelled to share it. He says this, it's on page 7. Next day found me drinking both gin and sedative. I also like to party. Okay. This combination of drugs and alcohol soon landed me on the rocks. Well, hot damn, Bill Wilson. Me too. My goodness, right? I have to share with you who's up here tonight. Guys, I walk into this room, to these rooms, with 30 years of alcoholism. I walked into these rooms. I was part of the opiate epidemic. I'm going to get in and out of that real quick. Respect Alcoholics Anonymous tradition, singleness of purpose, but you got to know who's standing here. 16 years, opiate epidemic, and about 7 years in crack cocaine, which is interesting because I only smoked crack once, but it lasted for 7 years. Anyone relate to something like that, you know? I don't know what's a, you know? And, you know, alcoholism early on got me into IOPs and PHPs, and it got me into my first set of meetings. I kind of came in kicking the tires a little bit, you know. And I'd attack drugs and alcohol like a rabid mad dog. And I'd just, you know, just see what I'm just going to approach recovery. I'll just check it out. I never had a chance. I've been bringing a knife to a gunfight for so long, it's not even funny. It's amazing I didn't die on the way in here. And it's by God's grace only that didn't happen. I heard a cat from down south call, man, if you can relate to this idea, the difference between standing on this earth and being buried below it, seconds and inches. Anyone dig on that? Yeah, me too. Me too. It's just part of my story. You know, opiate addiction got me into methadone clinics, and you put them all together, and I end up in detoxes and the 30-day treatment centers because I have insurance and long-term recovery centers. You know, you put it all together. But I walk in here with 30 years of alcoholism. And I can get through my war stories pretty quick. So quickly, in fact. Allow me just to reference one line, and there is a solution. Okay. The alcoholic illness. For with it, there goes annihilation of all things worthwhile in life. Period. Annihilation. Total devastation. And have I experienced, by the way, that's a promise. I don't want those promises. I won't say things like the promises are coming true. Which promises? I do not want that anymore. So what's worthwhile in life? Here's the checklist, right? Career, gone. Condo, gone. Car, gone. Relationship, gone. Family, gone. Friends, gone. It's all gone. It's all burned to the ground. Have I qualified myself yet? You guys get it? Yeah, man, me too. You know, I experienced the allergy of the body with those things that I referenced earlier, especially with alcohol. And I'll talk about my first time drinking only because of its importance in understanding, not understanding then, but understanding now, looking back on the experience part of alcoholism off the jump for me. Book talks about some of us drink our way across the line that we don't go back. It's not my story. I had it off the rip. And it was one of those nights, 13 years old. That seems to be like a magic number for a lot of us in Alcoholics Anonymous. And guys, and we, the group of buds, we went to drinking, like we do, on a weekend. Someone's mom was gone. And it was one of those nights, and we drank beer, and we got drunk, we blacked out, we passed out, we woke up, we threw up, and we all rallied the next morning, kind of like getting it together, like, whoa, that was awesome. And we knew we were going to do a whole lot of that for a whole long period of time. But here's the thing, okay? So what I did on that first night, I overshot the mark. It wasn't my intention to black out and puke and pass out, but I did it. So truly, it was the second experience with drinking that is the one that brings some things to light for me. Same group of people. We go out to do some drinking. Everyone else recalibrates. I don't. I can't. I have an allergic reaction to alcohol, and I don't even know it. It wasn't like we got together and said, guys, you know, this was our second night. Y'all did better than me in some way. Is it possible that the phenomenon of craving kicked in after I took the first one? We weren't talking about things like that. You know, if I look back on it, I know exactly what it was. And that is my experience with alcohol. When I start, I don't stop. You can say can't, won't, doesn't. It doesn't stop until something comes in between me and alcohol. And I never know what that's going to be. Usually not very good, if you can relate. Man, and that's the thing. And, you know, and early on, it's like I got possession of alcohol as a 14-year-old, and I got some legal consequences and those kind of things, but they were pretty minimal as I look back on those experiences. They didn't show up very often. I progressed to college, and the progressive nature of this thing, now I have opportunity and fake IDs, and I start walking lines for police officers because we were just going to go out and have a couple of beers. And me and my friend from Naples, we joke, we had a couple of 17s and 19s, and it's like, but here's the thing, later on in life, He's got sufficient reason to stop. He drank like I drank, but he's got sufficient reason to stop, and he does. And I can't. And that's what separates, what makes me a real alcoholic, as the book talks about. You know? And that's the thing, man. And I'm embarrassing to my friends. I'm starting confrontations that are unnecessary. It's like I'm that close from getting kicked out of college. I'm down at Florida Southern College in Lakeland, Florida. And like, you know, and man, I'm in trouble. And no one knows really what they're looking at, but they're looking at a kid who's just, he's drinking too much alcohol. And now I'm having some consequences, and I don't know what it is, but I get through some things for some reason. You know, some people are police magnets. It's just not part of my story. It doesn't make me any better than anybody else. It made my run perhaps last longer than it would have otherwise. It had nothing to do with me at all. So I start to look around a little bit. Guys, I'm the guy that came in, and eventually I reluctantly read the big book. Has anyone reluctantly read the big book? And by the way, if you say you read the big book, I'm going to call you out. No, you don't. No one reads the big book. It's a textbook. Who reads textbooks? You're lying. Program of rigorous honesty. You study the book, or you probably use it as a coaster. It's my experience, my personal experience. I'm not here to call you out. But maybe at some point tonight, if I disturb someone on the question of alcoholism, I think that's okay. Right? I couldn't find myself in this book. It was written in old-timey language. You know, I'm a jack. I don't really have any traction on careers and stockbroker and a proctologist and I can't relate to this stuff, right? And someone brings the book to life for me at some point. That comes in a little bit. At some point in my story. But I start to find myself in the book all of a sudden. And it starts to talk about me. So this book was written not just about me. Thank God for me. And that is my experience. It talks about a real alcoholic. Here is a fellow that has been puzzling you. Right? And I have to ask myself, have I experienced those? Have I been puzzling to others, especially, it says, in lack of control? Well, absolutely. I'm the guy who drinks and just disappears like a Houdini act. I'm gone. Whoa. Well, where'd he go? We were going to go out all night. Where'd you go? I just turned my phone off. I got other things to do. Right? I'm puzzling. I drink and I get in cars and I drive. That's puzzling to people because they say, Bill, don't you know how much alcohol you drank? You're not supposed to do that. Yeah, oh yeah, I'm struggling with decision making, you know. Oh, just it's the right and wrong thing that has me. It got me again, right? I'm puzzling the people. My employer, dude, I'm so they're looking at my resume, and they're looking at my production, and they're looking at my resume going, this is a can't-miss kid. They're looking at my production, and they're like, these things aren't adding up. They're puzzled. It's Monday, and he's not in again. They're puzzled by this stuff. You know, my girlfriend, she's puzzled by things like, honey, where's the TV? I noticed that too. Right? I drink and things go missing. Not my things. Your things. Right? The book says, I do absurd, incredible, tragic things while drinking. And does my experience align with this? We're talking about a real alcoholic here, so I got to take a look at this. And I do, right? Absurd. It's inappropriate. It's illogical. And all those things I named already. Anyone ever get into some drinking and internet shopping? Some of you old-timers are like, what? What's that? Drinking and internet shopping, it's a real hoot. Like things you always wanted but never would buy all of a sudden show up from Amazon Prime. It's like, whoa, I always wanted that. How did that happen? Totally illogical, absolutely unreasonable. And I do little things like that. And I pick fights with really big guys. And I get my butt kicked a little bit out there. I'm in trouble, guys. And this is how it shows up. And it shows up through the literature as I start to relate my experience, you know. And, of course, the inappropriate one. Well, she came to the party with you, but I'm trying to see if she'll leave with me. And that's just the boss's wife, right? So that's like it gets like that in my world, right? So my experience aligns with some of these things. It says I'm always more or less insanely drunk. Would anyone like to check the more box with me, right? Builds up a bright outlook for the family and for me. Anyone here clean up quick? Just one of you. Good. Okay. Me and Jay. That's the thing, man. I clean up quick, but I can never keep it. But that's the worst part is that I give people a little bit of hope. Maybe this is the time. He looks better. He got a haircut. Starched the shirt. Pressed some khakis. Maybe this is the time. And I pull the structure down on my head because I get loaded no matter what. That's alcohol. That's what alcoholism is to me. It's like when I want to get loaded and I get loaded and I have alcoholism, that's bad. But that isn't even the problem to me. It's when I'm trying to be clean and sober and I get loaded anyway. That has been the basis of the problem that keeps showing up with untreated alcoholism in my life. I came in here dying, you know? And that's it. And they're just waiting for the other shoe to drop. And then it talks about top page 22. If you've ever saved a wake up, welcome to Alcoholics Anonymous. So glad you're here. You're probably in the right place. I have experience with plenty of people who don't have what I have, and they have never saved a wake up. Just saying, you know. Dr. Silkworth said, there's a quote I found. He said, I suffer from an obsession of the mind that condemns one to drink and an allergy of the body that condemns one to die. And I'm in that cycle. And I'm in that cycle. Talks in the doctor's opinion. And I stay in that cycle. I pick up. I was going to be sober, but I picked up against my word. I go on the run. I emerge remorseful. Lots of promises. Back again. Do it again. And I do it again. And I do it again. You know, it's untreated alcoholism. I bounced around some jobs. I sold insurance. I sold floor covering. I sold produce, right? You think I'm a salesman. I'm a guy who can't keep a job, right? You know, that's, I can get a job, no problem. It's the keeping of the job that seems to serve a problem with untreated alcoholism in my story and in my life, you know, and they don't last long. Sometimes they ask me to leave. Sometimes when the walls are coming in, I just walk away to avoid the inevitable and the shame that comes with that. So I was doing some some thinking one day. And I thought, you know, who could really use me in their world? Higher education. That's the people that need me. Which is an interesting thing because, now, you may say, well, is that a sane, sober thought? I'll let you decide. I have been nothing but an absolute terrible student my entire life, and I have never, ever in my life ever been a teacher. So that's what I'm thinking. That's where I'm going to make my mark. I'm going to get into that kind of thing. So here's the thing. And this is the alcoholic part of this. I pull it off. You know, I pull it off. I make it happen. Man, I was never built for that thing. And it's like book talk about stage. I was a stage character walking around, raising hell. I was dangerous everywhere I went. And that includes in the job place, you know. And I was doing things like, you know, for a while I did. And here's the thing I was good at. Like the alcoholic statement is I pulled it off. The addict statement is I was good at it. Like, how do we pull that off? But we like pull some stuff off. Hey, if we stay on the runs as long as we stay, we got to be pretty good at pulling some things off. Am I right? You guys dig, you know, I won some awards. I was good at it. You know, I had some political capital. People liked me, really. But I have untreated alcoholism and I stop showing up and they hold on to me for a while. I start borrowing money from students. Ooh. Now, this isn't like middle school. That's just weird. It's a little college I'm working at up in Portland, Maine. And I'm borrowing money and I'm getting paid and I should replace it, but I can't. I've got some things I got to do. I've got some things I got to have. I just can't get to that now. Turns out they wanted their money back. And so did my colleagues, right? So, you know, I'm in this space, guys, and that's kind of where it gets to. I've kicked the tires of the rooms. I don't want what you have. I don't know what it is that you have, but I'm pretty sure I don't want it. I'm closed-minded, and I have contempt prior to investigation. Right? So, but I'm willing to allow my sister, my hero, to, you know, pay for a recovery coach. I don't need a sponsor. I've seen you people. You're trying to give me one of those blue books. But no one else had one, so I'm not going to be the loser in the room with a blue book. No, thank you. You can have that. But can I get $5? I'm kind of short on gas. You mind? You keep your blue book, but can I get $5? It's like, that's where my space, you know, that's where I'm at. And I'm sitting in this recovery meeting. It's the monthly check-in. And her name was Kathleen. That's the counselor, recovery coach. And this is a different meeting. And I just know it walking in there. And she's looking right at me. I can feel her eyes burning holes through mine. And I'm looking at my hands because I'm at a space where I really can't look at anybody in the eye. And she says the one thing I had never heard before. She said, Bill, you're dying. And I knew she was right. And I always got some fight in me, right? But there was nothing to fight because she was absolutely right. And she said, Bill, you need some help. I'm looking at my hands and I said, I know. She said, now. And I said two words that many sponsors in this room hear from many of their sponsees. I said, yeah, but. Huh? Sound familiar? You need help now. Yeah, but. Yeah, but. I'm kind of big. Look, I'm in my dream job. I'm kicking butt at work. Got to pay some people back. She doesn't need to know that. You know, and it's like, I don't want to lose that. I took someone's position when they took a semester off and I got their job. And I'm always in fear that I can't get what I want. And then when I get it, I'm in fear you're going to take what I have because I already did that to someone. Someone's going to do it to me. And I'm in the cycle of fear, self-centered fear. Been in that for a long time. And I didn't want to lose my job, which looking back, they probably would have gladly helped me. Right. But it's part of my path. And I wasn't open-minded to that. I was part of a research team with some colleagues, and we were getting ready to publish a paper in a peer-reviewed journal, which sounds really boring, and it absolutely would have been if I had stayed on it, but they kicked me off. They went on and got published and went to, on the university's dime, they went out to Germany to talk about what they found. What a cool experience. They were doing what they were supposed to be doing. They were embedded in their lives and in their careers, and I couldn't pull that off, right? And I was going to school, working on a doctorate degree. I was a terrible student, which I still think is funny that I'm working on a doctorate degree. I mean, so it's not like this isn't like an upper echelon university, but it turns out they cashed my checks, so they admitted me. So I'm in school for this thing, and within 6 months of this meeting with Kathleen, right, I get kicked off the research team. The school says, you can't come here anymore. I would always do good for 2 weeks, and then I get paid, and then I'm gone. You know what I mean? I'm like, yeah, I'm good, and I get paid, then I'm gone. And I'm in that cycle. And they walked me out of the halls of the university and took my keys and said, I'm sorry, but you can't come back here anymore. You know, the truth is I've been an unemployable employee for way too long, and they let it ride longer than they needed to, but they just didn't know what to do with this. And I'm just a man walking around with untreated alcoholism and a spiritual malady that is kicking my butt. It's killing me, right? So I finally surrender to the process of designing my own treatment. Have you tried that? How'd it go? Welcome to the real me. Here we are, right? That whole deal. Man, and so I do the research and I'm looking at, cause it's my, I know what I need. No, I can't go here. I gotta go here. That website's got palm trees. Ooh, let's look there. Do they take my insurance? I choose where I go. Guys, I walk in there desperate to feel better. And they treat exactly what I'm looking for. I get all the therapies in the world. I mean everything. Grief therapy, individual therapy, which is fine. I got some things in group therapy. And we did, what else? We had chiropractic therapy and we had massage therapy. And we had, acupuncture therapy. Played a lot of basketball, went to the beach, and it was co-ed. You know? Which was cool. Because, so I'm at this place, and it's funny that Paul talked about it last night. I also met a girl. Which is interesting. I feel like we're kindred spirits. We're like the only two people here that have ever done that. And that it's like, thank you for sharing. So now I have someone I can talk to. You know, and it's just, it's craziness. And there was a therapist there named Lisa. I've been trying to find her and I can't yet. We'll see what God's got in store. She was trying to help me. I was looking at the beautiful halfway house on the beach in Delray and apartment and it was really nice. And I'm thinking, well, that looks right about my style. I'm a grown man. That's where I belong. And she's like, Bill, no, you need to go where I end up in the long-term recovery center where some of these guys are coming here today. I'm so glad they're here with us. She was trying to get me there way before I end up there. It's like our families and friends trying to get us to recovery way before we get to, we're all there at some point, but they get there way before we do. And she was trying to help me, you know, and I don't know. It's like, I think about, you know, some of the language in the third step, you know, it's like our little plans and designs when it talks about the third step promises. I look back on it, it's like, and that's all it is. But I'm under life and death here, and it's not so little all of a sudden. It's deadly. My plans and designs are deadly, but I can't see it. And I'm unwilling to open my eyes to you. And I go on that last run because I walk around with untreated. Guys, that's my story. There's a countdown always going on, left untreated. If I stop what I'm doing today, put a clock on me, because I'll get loaded again, and I have no idea when it's going to be. But this thing has progressed over the years, and that window keeps getting shorter and shorter, the runs keep getting way more expensive, and I don't know if I'll make it back. I'm absolutely convinced in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous to stay in the middle of this thing, because I will get loaded again. And I'm under no illusion of that. I was not always in that space. But anyway, I digress for just a minute. So I go on that last run, and I go to a place that I've never been at, and it was hopelessness. It's like that's a terrible space for an alcoholic to be in. But man, what a gift in my life. Because I'm finally split wide open, and I have never been before. And with that came surrender. And willingness. Talks about in working with others. The more hopeless he feels, the better he's more willing to take your suggestions, right? So rock on. And there's a little line in Fred's story. And Fred's run, and that last run in Delray that went from Delray Beach to Portland, Maine, that process snuffed out the last flicker of conviction that I could do the job myself. So for the first time, you know, I pull my hand out. And here's what happens. I was sitting this morning with some guys talking about fraternity life. And I could see that was an important part of their life. And I have great respect for that. And it's not everyone's story, but it's mine. I have a fraternity ring that I wear if I ever have an opportunity to share my story. I'm a Sigma Chi. And so the brothers that I was, like, scaring the hell out of and puzzling and you know, make confrontations and but some of my very best friends, 25 years later, show back up in my life. You know, I'm couch surfing in someone's house. I'm texting on a phone that's not mine. And, you know, everything's burned to the ground. And my sister gets a hold of me and said, Billy, let's do coffee. And we do. And she's in tears. And I don't know why now. I'm not sure. I mean, you know, it could be anything at this point. What did I do now? And she says, you have no idea what your friends are doing for you. I said, what are you talking about? She said, I don't know how they found me, but they found me. So this group of men from mostly the Florida area where they're from, and again, I'm back up in Portland, Maine, they had opened up a Facebook page, and I think they called it Save Brownie. That's my nickname in college, my last name being Brown. And they opened up a little PayPal account, and they all threw money in. I've been hitting them up for money for years. They said, Bill, they're not going to give you $50 more to get what you got to have, but they're willing to send you to a recovery center if you will have it. Ooh, wow. 3 days of thinking about that option, right? Because it's like those are not easy alternatives to face, but I'm finally down to two, and I've never been down to two alternatives before, like the book talks about. I'm going to burn it to the ground, or I'm going to accept spiritual help. And I text two words, I'm ready. The next day I'm on an airplane, and it's a 12-step call that starts in Portland, Maine, and these guys are driving up from Naples, Florida to meet me in Charleston, South Carolina to do a little detox, you know, and then I end up at a long-term recovery center where some of these guys are here today called the Bridges of Hope over in Stapleton, Georgia. And this is why I believe I've had traction now as that being the beginning of my recovery. I had no hand in it, not one. I didn't say where I was going. I didn't even ask where I was. I had no idea where. We were driving on property. I had no idea what the place was called. I didn't say, how long is it? When do I get my phone? Right? When do I get my car? You know, what are the amenities? Do we have, you know, chiropractic therapy here too? No. No. Get in your bunk bed. I went with a half a bag of nothing, and this is what I found. I had everything I needed to get started. So grateful to be part of the path that has opened up before me, guys. I go through this process and I get a little, I don't know, introduction to some recovery. But almost a year of working, being in a recovery center, starting to work at a recovery center, and a lot of meeting-based sobriety. I don't know it, but I've not experienced what Silkworth says, I better get an entire psychic change or there's little hope for recovery. See, I'm not there. I don't have that. So I know there's a countdown going on as I look back on that. God's grace, really only. It's what kept me on the path for a while. God's grace is real, and I know it. Right. I get in front of a guy who was part of my 12-step call. He became my sponsor. He wasn't for a while. And there's a little part in the book, and there is a solution. And it says, the man who's making the approach. And he said, Brownie, I'll sponsor you. I said, yeah. Because I'd worked with a sponsor for a minute. They sent me down to another location to work down there. He said, what are you going to do for a sponsor? I said, I don't know. Go to meetings, meet some people, do speed dating, sponsor. You know, I'll interview people for a while, kind of however that looks, you know what I mean? And he made an approach. And had the same difficulty, and I knew as we shared some stories, I knew he had walked in my shoes. And he obviously knew what he was talking about, because he spoke a language out of this book that I had no access to at that point. His whole deportment shouted to me that he was a man with a real answer. He had a job, and he was getting promoted, and he drove 3 hours to do step work with me with his own gas money in his own car. Like, that's a big deal in my world, man. What is it that you guys are doing? All of a sudden, I'm seeing maybe you do have something that I want. It's not the car. It's the gas money. He's living life. This cat is free to move around and do whatever. I haven't been in that space in decades, right? And we start getting to work. And around the time I get taken through the steps, his sponsor, now my grand sponsor, and the guy come down to our place, and they do a Big Book Comes Alive weekend. You guys hook up with that? Anyone mess with that? My world changes. Going through the work for the first time, really thorough and honest inventories, dropping it all, never done that before, doing all the work. Bringing this to life for me, I couldn't see myself in this, and these guys changed my world, man. So grateful for the guys who are aggressive, not imposing, but seeking, carrying the message. So much gratitude for our founders, Bill and Bob, and Doc and Bill, I think, and you guys who are still around, man. So grateful, because I'm not sitting here otherwise. I get this thing. I know you're going to say, oh, we're a link in the chain. I get it. That's all I want to be too, right? So they bring this thing to life, and it dawns on me, you know. It's like, so I've been in and out of meetings for the better part of 10 years or so, mostly out. I've had 3 sponsors over the course of these meetings. I've owned a Big Book for like 2 days, and I've been at a $30,000 recovery center. I had a recovery coach, Kathleen, you know, a couple home groups. And I have no idea what my problem is. I would have told you my problem were drugs and alcohol. Solution to that problem is real easy, right? No drugs and no alcohol. But that doesn't fix me. I get worse when you take it away from me. I get edgy and irritable and bent, and I always change how I feel. It's not a decision I get to make. It's going down. But I don't even know what my problem is. And they bring this thing to life for me. I get qualified for the first time in 10 years. So grateful that someone was willing to do that with me. Make sure, number one, I even belonged here. That I need what you have. Right? Turns out I fit. We went through the work pretty quickly. And that's something Jose was talking about. It was part of my story. And again, that doesn't need to be part of yours, but it was part of mine. My sponsor knew that there was a countdown in my life. And he didn't know when that clock was gonna strike. Pick up today. And we got on with the steps like my butt was on fire, and it was. And we chunked out the sessions in a few weeks, and we traveled back and forth from Hilton Head, South Carolina, down to South Georgia, from South Georgia up there, and we chunked this thing out. And in very short order, he gets me up to amends. And I start making amends. And that first amends I make, I feel this freeing weight come off my shoulders. Really, it's my experience. And I made it on the day I made my 8-step list. We were just trying to follow what the book tells us to do. And I'm not a step technician, or we're just doing the best that we can with the program that was given. I only have to accept spiritual help. I don't have to design it. Thank God. You don't want my design. Right. And we get into the work, and, you know, and we start this deal, and I make my amends, and I'm on that path, and we get into 10, 11, and 12, and I'm driving down the road, and it dawns on me one day. Right. I haven't thought about it. I haven't not thought about it. This thing that has always been on me is gone. 10-step promises. It's no longer a power share I get to say in a meeting to sound cool. Oh, the 10-step promises. Let me tell you about the miracle of step 10. That's nice. But until I experience them, I'm headed for trouble. But I got to experience them through the work. Thank God. I'm finally in a place that's safe and protected. And it just happened. It just came automatically. And that's my experience. But I had never gotten there because I never did anything. Guys, I'm a chronic unlapser. You heard me. Unlapser. Bill, that's not even a word. It is now. I can't call myself a relapser because I have a question for you. Relapse from what? What I relapse from? I never did the work. I never had a program with any sustainability. I never did anything but just not drink or use. I'm sorry, but that's not recovery. It's abstinence. And abstinence doesn't work for me. It's not a sustainable solution. All I did, I've always had a, so if I'm in abstinence, I have a conscious separation from God. It's only at a place where I get conscious contact, enter the world of the spirit, which is still real new for me. What do I know about spirit living? What a cool deal and what a ride. Right? I'm an unlapser. It's not my word. I borrowed it from a guy I work with. My sponsor said, Bill, grab a pen. I said, okay. What are we doing? He said, relapse prevention. Oh, man, I better get ready. I need a big pad of paper. He says, okay, write this down. I said, I'm ready. He says, 9. Okay. 10. Okay. 11. Oh, I'm thinking, wow, he's real good at numbers. This is good for you, Joe. 12. And I'm like, what? What is this? He said, you're going to stay on your amends and continue to live in steps 10, 11, and 12. And he introduced them as the growth steps to me. They've been introduced as maintenance steps, and I get where it comes from in the 10-step stuff. But he said, Bill, here's the deal. We're going to be growing. And he started to show me a little bit about it. He talked about growing and understanding and effectiveness through regular 10 steps. Right? And that's the thing. And it's like, we were talking to, was it today? So this thing's all coming together this weekend. We're doing a little 6 and 7 deal today, and that was an awesome talk. And I see where 6 and 7 shows up through the 10 step. And I understand regular 10 steps, we're going to keep this pipeline, this new access to power that I'm getting through the work in 4 through 9. We need to keep it clean, and I understand that. And I understand the nightly review to see, you know, maybe I can catch something I missed. But what I found was in this last year, I'm 10-stepping the same stuff. But I'm 10-stepping, so I'm a man in recovery, I'm growing in understanding and effectiveness, but it's the same things. But here's what I really found. So the 10-step directions in the book are very different than what's on the wall, right? So that's a whole other deal. Like, if you want to do the program, it's in here. And so I'm going through the process of whatever keeps showing up in these defects of character as they crop up, when they crop up. It's the same stuff over and over, and it's the same stuff over and over. And for the first time in 4 years, I wrote inventory last year. And I remember calling Joe and saying to Joe, these things I've been 10-step with you, it's over and over. All of a sudden, what happened is, these things that are objectionable to others that I found in the 6-step, they're no longer unacceptable to me. They're starting to work for me. Now, I don't like it, and they're not supposed to be happening to me. I'm in recovery. But they're happening. And I said, Joe, this is what I believe. I don't want to tell you what I got to tell you. But I believe that to drink is to die. And this whole thing, at the end of the day, I will get loaded again if I do not stay unblocked from power. Right? And I've had a really cool experience in this. I mean, like, really immediate results. Now, I still have more work to do, obviously. And we talked about, you know, to improve my conscious contact through prayer and meditation is to grow. To improve is to grow. Now, guys, I'm not in the cutting edge deal on the meditative scene, but I'm open-minded to that. I've had a really cool experience that continues to shape and evolve in my life. I think it's been kind of cool and kind of neat. But what I do is I do it every day, and I do it when it tells me to do it. And I do it because I believe that to drink is to die. And I'm absolutely convinced that's where this leads if I stop. If I'm only doing, you know, just, well, I do it in the morning, but that's all. If that works for you, guys, I'm not telling anyone to do anything that works for you. If I start changing this, I'm working my program. My program gets me loaded. You get it? It's my story. I can't do my program. My little plans and designs, not a good look. And he talks about, in Bill's story, he talks about we grow spiritually through work and self-sacrifice for others. And man, and I don't know where they're going to show up. I sponsor some guys that are a little drive away from me, north and south, and it's never convenient. But it doesn't matter. If I'm getting access to power and if I'm living and asking God to show me what I can do for you today so I can be of maximum service to you and your kids who I've been running over all my life. And by the way, my sponsor drove 3 hours one way to get to me. I remember, a little motivation doesn't always hurt. I remember that, you know. Because it tells me that if I don't do these things, the trials and low spots are coming, we heard some guys talk about, and thank you for sharing these things through the weekend and from up here, and they're coming. But we're promised to get through them if we grow spiritually through this work, through things like we're doing here, and giving up your time and sitting newcomer. I'm watching guys walk along with their arms around newcomers, and newcomers are crying, unloading, working self-sacrifice for others. Man, that's where it's at. That's so cool. It's around here all weekend. Hard to miss, right? I'm convinced I need to stay connected with my powerlessness. And the further I get away from it, and some of you guys got some big numbers, man. That's awesome. But I watch what you do. And I want what you have. And I sit next to a man on Wednesday night. I want what he has. He is on fire for recovery in life and sponsorship and the other parts of this deal. I want what he has. Is it possible that if I do what he does, I might get what he has? And I'd ask yourself to ask you those questions today. Do you want what we have? And who are we? And what is the freedom? I want the freedom. I want the having fun. I want the starting businesses and going back to school and being in healthy relationships and being given the power to get out of the ones I don't belong in. And I experienced these things finally in Alcoholics Anonymous through the program and your tutelage. Right? Life is so full. My sponsee that's going up to Connecticut. We were hanging out the other day. He says, "Bill, what do you do for boredom?" You know? I saw, like, I try not to be like the, like, you know, the sponsor. He just goes, "Ha, ha, ha, ha." Yeah. Because I have that. I don't have that. I'm like, "Dude, man, just stick around for a minute. Really. Stick around for a minute. You know? Be in the middle of this deal. Hang out. Hang around. And stay. And watch what happens. That little downtime that you rarely get, right? Because life gets full. Life gets full. It's my experience. It's all graces, right? You're going to start to appreciate, is there any way we can get some downtime and be bored for just a minute? That would be real nice. I'm sure some of the committee members and some of you guys doing stuff this weekend relate to what I'm talking about. Guys, I'm in the first healthy relationship I've ever been in my life. And I was sharing that with someone today, you know. And I didn't come down here to be in recovery to find a girl, you know. I'm always seeking to fulfill my needs. And I mean, I came here for, again, my hand was out of this deal. But I found God shows up and he put one in my life. And I'm going to break her in. And I mean, she's on this path with us. She has no problem with that, you know. And we get to do some things together. But it's not like, you know, we don't do the programs together, although we will pray and meditate together sometimes, and we do some things like that. We end up at some of the same meetings, but not all. She's my 12-step hero. She's like a 12-step gangster. I mean, it's so like easy and seamless and flawless to her. Because this is what it looks like for me. You know, the guy calls, "Bill, oh man, you know, oh, I need you. Can you come, you know, and oh man, yeah, what time is it? Oh, you're an hour away. Oh, man, I was so going to work out." I don't say that out loud, but I'm saying it inside my voice. You know, and we're going to try to finish that Netflix thing. We were totally going to do movie night. And I do that stuff. Guys, selfish and self-centeredness continues to be the root of my problems today. That is my world, man. 60 to 63, baby. I need God quick when I wake up in the morning. You know. And she is just like, bam, she's gone. And she's gone. And it's just, it's cool. She's truly my hero for 12-step work. And it blows me away. And it's just kind of neat. It really is. She's going back to school to study to be a nurse. And I get to help her pay for that. Guys, I always need to be bailed out. And I need you to pay for all my stuff. You relate to that? And it's like we're making financial amends and doing what we can. But I get to help someone else find their dreams. And that's just like, that's a whole new space for this cat. There's gotta be God in this, cause I don't do that. Right? It's really fun. My book got wet. Anyone get their big book wet? Man, what a trip that is. That is not cool. It's like, it's already big. Now it's real big. Check this out. She knew the space I got into real quick, and it was not a good one. It's like, You know, we had a few big book comes alive. The thing's like Jerry Garcia threw up in my book. It's like tie-dyed now. You know, all this stuff's all mixed together. She went into the bathroom and took a hairdryer and dried every individual page on her own for free and for fun. Isn't that cool? Keeper, you know what I mean? Like, that's just so cool. I've never told that to anybody before. I forget about that, but she's done that, you know. There's a deal in the third step. We'll back out of here in a second. There's a deal offered to us in the third step promises. He provided what we needed. If we kept close to him and performed his work well. So if I do those things, I'll get what I need, right? And man, that's just why I found how my life has shown up today. It doesn't say I get what I want, and it doesn't say or in between those two things. But if I do those things, you know. My mom and dad are in their 80s. And I get to have the experience of growing a relationship that is better today than it has ever been before I put drugs and alcohol in my body. Do I look back and do I hate some of the things I did? Oh, you better believe it. Right? But I understand the process of amends and the place of growth for me and for them. I'm grateful for alcoholism. I know that'll freak people out, not people in this room maybe, but I'm absolutely grateful for it. Because I don't get access to God. Because I don't do that. I'm not gonna do that. And I'm gonna find my way to manipulate back into their lives and just maybe we won't talk about these things. And it's really not healthy. But God has shown up, man, and it's just so cool. And my sister is still my hero. And I got to be back in my brother's life and he's got kids, you know, and they don't have to hide their kids from me anymore because they did. You know that job I talked about, like that I had for teaching that I had no business being in? God's using me a little bit today. You know, I'm not the best and I'm not the worst, I don't think. But I get to teach today and I got 14 years of teaching experience. And I have a textbook every day in my world at work at the Recovery Center Bridges of Hope. And we open this up and we study it. And I try to bring it to life for those who will have it and will do it. And I see that God continues to work like that. And it's so cool. You know, and it's like, and what a cool deal. So I found out early that my job cannot be my recovery. You know, I don't say this lightly. I've buried two employees that worked for me but didn't work their own program. We found out the hard way. It's what it looks like. Working in recovery isn't my recovery, and it can't be. It's got to be off that property. And I find myself in our communities helping the men out there. And I understand that today. My three best friends that I came into recovery with are dead, you know. And I also know that they never had access to a sufficient solution. They hadn't quite caught an adequate presentation of the program. Bill Wilson wrote that, right? Our chief responsibility is an adequate presentation of the program, period, at the end of the sentence. And someone did that to me. And they're dying out there in our rooms and in our hospital and our businesses and in the streets, right? It's been a lot of fun, growth in my recovery this year. I've got to move around. My sponsor and I got to go to another of our sister or brother, well, we'll just call him sister, Bridges of Hopes, and spend a weekend bringing the book to life for them. And we don't get paid for that. That's not how that works. I get it. But it's like, how cool, what a cool deal, you know. My sponsor was a guy that came in atheist, and he's become an ordained minister. And he did the ceremony at my sister's, my hero, wedding in Hilton Head, which is a pretty cool circular thing in my story as it unfolds. You know what I mean? And any dog people in here? Come on. Put your hands up. Oh, man, I asked that in Georgia. That's a stupid question. I'm sorry about that. Oh, man. When I was running and gunning at the end of my run, in those crazy years in a relationship, we got a rescue dog from Arkansas. We named him Charlie Brown. And I walked away from that home and that place to come to recovery, and we left Charlie down there. Charlie had heartworms as a puppy, and we were always going to have the surgery next month. It's like $1,200 next month. And I felt so much shame around that, really, you know. And it's like, man, this poor dog is going to die early. And I left him there with that family. And it was nuts. And so 6 years go by, and that family needs to put him back into a shelter. Charlie's 9 years old now, and I haven't seen him again. But I think about him a lot. I love dogs, you know. And it comes across my path that he's going back to a shelter. And through some prayer and meditation, through counseling with my wife and some other people, you know, I get a chance to rescue him a second time and fly him from Portland, Maine, which it was like last year when it was like negative 20, like for a 3 week span. It took 3 weeks to get him here. He couldn't get on an airplane. And we got to rescue him again. But look what God did. I'm talking to the vet, right? And they're saying, so Bill, we did all his medications and all of his labs, and they went through the checklist. And the lady said, and he's heartworm free. And she went on, and I'm just like, stop. Ma'am, you said he's heartworm free. She says, yes, sir. So what you mean is he has no new onset. There's no new heartworms. I don't know how that works, because he has them. And she's thinking like I'm crazy. And she's like, no, he doesn't have heartworms. I said, no, he has heartworms, and y'all were going to charge me $1,200 for the surgery. I know this because you wanted my money. I didn't have any. And we're going, and I'm like, whoa. So what happens is 6 years later or so, right, God has entered into my life and done the one thing that I couldn't do, and that was remove the obsession to take the first one. And I put the allergy of the body dormant. I have recovered. I have gotten well. I am free, right? I'm no longer in the abyss of alcoholism and addiction. I got out of places I didn't belong in. And when he sent Charlie back to me, Charlie was free, and he was heartworm free. And he didn't suffer from a deadly disease that he had as a puppy. I can't explain it. I don't even care. But how cool is that? And I got Charlie Brown, a 10-year-old, and he's just my buddy, and he sleeps in bed with me, between me and Betsy, and it's just so cool. What a neat deal. And I got to take him off the hands of a family that didn't need that burden anymore, because it was a burden to them. There's an amends in that somewhere. I'm going to wrap it up here. Guys, I saw the room, and as we were doing the countdown, and I don't know what new is. I don't even care. Like, who cares? But there's a lot of people standing, and I was one of them. And, you know, Bill Sanders and Art, and Mike, right? Earl Hightower, the Raymers, they're not going to be around forever. This isn't a morbid deal. So what it is a challenge. We need you. We need you to stay. And now at the end, and we're gonna swing, and we're going to say, keep coming back. It works if it works. And that's cool. I'm not saying anything. But what if you just stay? How about just, I'm not saying to change your way you do it, but just the idea, stay. Because like I said, keep coming back. It works if it works. And if you go to detox, you go to pawn shops, we can just keep that thing going all day, right? Stay. Really. I invite you into an attitude of recovery that the book invites us in the forward to the second edition. Permanent recovery. And I understand I experience God today, one day at a time. Daily we do these things. I understand the directions. But it says for good and all. Are you done for good and all? Dr. Bob says that. Permanent. I invite you to stay. Right? It's a challenge. There's a changing face of the disease in our country. It's everyone, man. And it's always been that way. And I understand it's the great evening up process. And it talks about that in the forewords. Anyone can get this thing. I got it. My mom doesn't. My sister doesn't. My brother does. Right? But it's our doctors and our nurses and our teachers and our grandmothers and our granddaughters. Right? It's the changing face of the disease. It's not just the cat under the bridge and rock onto those people too, because I know we go there. But it's not just that anymore. It's all over. It's our professionals. It's everyone. I invite you to join us in being the changing face of recovery. We get free. We get recovered. We experience freedom. 10-step promises, right? All we hear, we talk about this, we read in pop culture, I'm in recovery, but every day is a struggle. Every day is a battle. Damn it, I know life gets hard. I get that. We grow spiritually, we get past that. But guys, I ain't sitting on my hands anymore. I ain't chasing the dragon anymore. This morning I'm chasing coffee. Come on! Right? Let's get some! I'm the coffee guy, Kevin 55, woo! And I'm down with that. I ain't chasing it. I'm not going to the pawn shop today. Aren't you guys sick of living with four other roommates in bunk beds and halfway houses and rehabs? It's okay to be there. Be there. But get well and stay. We need you. And so does the cat that's dying that needs you, because only you can carry this message. God wants you here. Are you in? Stay. Come on, man. I believe in the changing face of recovery. I am not battling and struggling, not the first one. That subtle insanity has been removed. I don't obsess anymore. And I want people to understand that. They're always like, oh, Bill, you're like the old lady in town. You struggle. She holds me with both hands on one hand. I freak her out. I'm like, that's real sweet, but like, I'm not struggling, honey. And they look at me like a dog kind of goes, you know, like, don't you guys just fight it at first? Yeah, like, come on, like, there's some stuff going on. But man, we get to this place. I just invite you to be the changing face of recovery as we change what this looks like in the eyes of other people as the disease is changing. I'm going to tell one final story. This is the ladder, the slide, and two shovels. I want you to picture we've got on our property a little playground ladder that we built. It's a ladder that goes up and the kids walk up and they go over to a slide and they slide down to the ground, okay? And that ladder has 12 steps on it, okay? It's a daunting ladder. Man, it's a big old ladder. However, I have a tour guide, and I have a guy that's been up that ladder before. And he says, Bill, he made an approach to me. He says, Bill, come here. I'm going to show you how to do this. I'm not going to take the steps here, but I'm going to be your tour guide. And we're going to start going up these steps. So I start taking the steps. And he kind of goes, dude, you might want to get going. This ladder might collapse on itself. You go back on the ground. Why don't you get moving? And I start to move. And I get up through the steps of the ladder. And when I get to the top, I start looking around and everything has changed. The way I think, the way I feel, what I believe has changed. It's miraculous. It just happened just like that. And right as I'm about to enjoy this newfound freedom, my sponsor nudges me, goes, get down the ladder. You're going to get complacent. He nudges me down the ladder right to the bottom, and magically two shovels appear in the ground. And he's there next to me. And he doesn't just look at me and say, shovel, little brother. He grabs one shovel, throws me the other, and says, dig in. These are the trenches. This is where we're going to live. We're going to be spearheads for God's ever-advancing creation. And we're going to carry. And this is what he said to me. Your job is now to be at a place where you may be of maximum helpfulness to others. You should not hesitate to visit the most sordid spot on earth on such an errand. Keep on the firing line of life with these motives, and God will keep you unharmed. Thank you.